Today, I want to discuss a bit about how to understand n equal to 1 class F theories from a gravity point of view. So what is the general goal and hopes? And this has emerged from a recent revolution in how you understand n equal to 2 theories. To be brief, class F theories are obtained by taking M5 brains and wrap them on some Riemann surface with punctures. And typically, we start with N M5 brains. And the field theory on this is labeled by some ADE, labeled by some ADE type singularities. However, in this talk, we'll actually only worry about AN theories, or AN to zero theories. So in brief, what class F theories do for you is if you take 5 brains and wrap them on a Riemann surface, you get some 4D theory with possibly various supersymmetry. And the Riemann surface can be used to completely label these field theories. And also, it kind of gives you, maps out the protected sector of these field theories. Moreover, these surfaces, of course, can have punctures. And when you have punctures and you wrap 5 brains on such an object, you have to give me boundary conditions on the punctures. And these boundary conditions on the punctures will label different global symmetries of the field theory. So in addition to telling you the Riemann surface, I also give you data on the punctures, and this is enough to specify these field theories. So in the n equals to 2 case, of course, these things were worked out, starting with the work of Gaiotto in 09, and also Gaiotto-Mornaitsky also in 09. And my hope and goal is to try to extend this story to n equal to 1. Meaning how, if you take 5 brains on Riemann surfaces while preserving n equal to 1 supersymmetry, how should you label those theories and what source of data can you associate to punctures? Meaning, what data does the global symmetry that the punctures give you? This problem is hard, and you can approach it in various ways. You can do field theoretic approach, but field theoretic approach tend to be a bit more ad hoc. And last week, you heard a little bit about this from J1, my collaborator on this. But today, I want to describe what sorts of things you can hope to do from a gravity point of view, because if these theories exist and there's SCFTs, you can expect some of them to have some large n limit, and you can describe them in ADS-CFT. And of course, if you have ADS-CFT, then you should be able to come up with some classification scheme from the solution that you get from ADS-CFT. In the case of n equal to 2 theories, this was also done by Gaiotto-Maldacena. So in some sense, you want to know how such a system generalizes in the case of n equal to 1. And this is what I want to tell you today about. OK. So the starting point is, let me just give a general description. So today, so first, I will try to give some general description of class F, some generic statement that you can make. I'll review the n equal to 2 gravity duals and how they help you classify some of these theories, or tell you how to label the data, the punctures. And then I will discuss what you can do in n equal to 1. And please feel free to interrupt for any questions. OK. First question is, what happens when you put 5 brains on a Riemann surface? We can approach this problem from the field theory. If I take N 5 brains on the Riemann surface, this is equivalent to taking AN minus 1 to 0 theory on sigma G H, where H labels the punctures. And generically, if you take a field theory and you put it on a curved background, supersymmetry is going to be broken. So in order to preserve Susie, we need to do a partial topological twist. So to do this, we look at this field theory. It has an SO5R symmetry. And in order to have Susie, we need to preserve some spinner. So we look for a constant spinner. So we need to solve the equation where omega here is the curvature, is a spin connection of the curved background. In this case, we have a 2D curved background. So omega is a spin connection of the Riemann surface. So we need to turn on a background gauge field, which is valued in the R symmetry, to cancel this so we can get a spinner. So this space has a Lorentz group, Lorentz symmetry, which is SO2. So the gauge field that we turn on has to be SO2 valued or U1. So the R symmetry of the theory can be simply, for example, broken to SO2 times SO3, and we can make the gauge field valid under this SO2. This here is typically what's called the n equal to 2 twist, because then this background will preserve eight supercharges, and the SO3 becomes the SU2 R symmetry that you get. So more generically, what you can do is start with SO5 and consider the subgroup, which is SU2 output plus times SU2 minus. And I will consider a generic U1, which is some combination of the Cartan. Here. And then there is a constraint onto these two parameters coming from the fact that you want to cancel the spin connection. And the constraint here, you can more physically understand it, that when you turn on these U1 valued gauge fields, you're really turning on a magnetic field. So the flux, the total flux associated to these U1s must cancel the curvature of the background. So P plus Q is fixed is fixed by the Euler number. So here you get P plus Q has to be 2G minus 1 plus H, which is minus the Euler number here. Okay? So H is the number of punctures, and G is the genus of the Riemann surface. And you clearly now find that you don't just... So in the n equal to 2 twist, there is one twist. You don't have any more choice. But when you are doing a generic twist, here you will preserve 4 supercharges. So this gives you an n equal to 1 field theory. So you get a 1-parameter family of n equal to 1 theories for any... You should get a 1-parameter family of n equal to 1 theories for any type of compactification that you get, that you do. So you want to be able to describe such objects. Typically, we can label this parameter as P minus Q over P plus Q, where Z is called the twist parameter. There are two interesting limits, which I will come back to. When Z is 1 or Z is minus 1, for both cases, you get 8 supercharges. For both cases, you either have P is 0 or Q equal to 0, then actually the symmetry that you preserve here is larger from here. In the top case, you preserve a U1. You preserve this, you completely preserve this SU2. It's not broken. And in the bottom case, you preserve the other one. Okay? And in both cases, you preserve 8 supercharges. Okay? So those are symmetry enhancement. And when you want to describe the field theory associated to these theories, so the field theory that you get by doing such a compactification, this more generic compactification, will have two U1 symmetries, a U1 squared R symmetry. And in the field theory, you can label those two U1s as being J plus and J minus. And from these, you can construct some R symmetry, which is J plus plus J minus over 2, and a flavor symmetry, which is J plus minus J minus over 2. And then if you have a superconformal theory, then this means that you have some R symmetry, some superconformal R symmetry, which you can generically write as in this form. And this parameter measures the anomalous dimensions of the various operators, and it's typically fixed by using some A maximization in field theory. And this, of course, requires you to know the Tuft anomalies that go into the theory. Okay, so this was a brief review of how we write down some generic statements on these field theories. Oh, it's also here worth pointing out that when you have V is 1 and Z is minus 1, epsilon is here minus a third, and here epsilon is a third, and you get the R symmetry that you get is becomes the usual embedding of the n equal to 1 R symmetry inside n equal to 2. Okay. All right. So now we move on to trying to understand T theory. So so far, I haven't told you anything about the existence of field theories. I haven't told you any. All that I've done is just lay out, if they exist, what are the conditions they must satisfy. So now we want to explore. And our theme today will be all in gravity. So you want to know what happens in cases where you can possibly have a gravity dual. Okay. So first we'll describe what happens in n equal to 2, then we'll move on to n equal to 1 systems. So in n equal to 2 cases, you consider having n m5 on sigma g plus punctures, possibly with punctures. So your M theory setup that you start with is some 11D flat space. So you can partition your space in this way. Now you have this four-dimensional Minkowski space and the Riemann surface. The five brain is going to be wrapped along these directions. And this here actually is some Calabi-Yau twofold, which is equal to the cotangent bundle of sigma. Okay, so this C is fibered on the Riemann surface with a canonical bundle. So this is a setup, the flat space setup. Now to explore this, you want to go to the near horizon limit. So when you go to the near horizon limit, if you have an AD, if you have a CFT, then you would end up with an ADS 5 times the Riemann surface. I'll put these in quotations for reasons that I'll explain in a moment. You get a circle, S1, which is fibered on the Riemann surface. This is inherited from the U1 that you had here. You also get an interval, which I'll put T. And this interval, you also get an S2. Okay, so let me explain where the different parts come from. So the S2 is coming from the fact that you have an R3 here. So you have an SO3 isometry. So this SO3 gets preserved in the near horizon limit. So this gives you the S2. And then you have a radial direction for this R3. So if you put it as a radius times the two sphere. And then you have also the radial direction for the fiber. here, which where that radial direction goes with this S1 to give you C. So those two combine to give you one linear combination, which is the ADS5 radius, and the other linear combination gives you this interval. Okay?
So, it's not a linear combination, right?
Well, yeah. Well, actually, in this case, it is.
It's linear?
The one forms, the one forms rotate in an angle in this case. So these are discussed by Gauntlet and companies when they re-derived some of these solutions. You can write down the one forms here and the one forms there. There's actually a cosine type angle that relates. Okay, but the gist of the statement is that the ADS5 direction, radial direction, and the interval direction come from a mixture of the radius here and the radius there. Okay, so you do not need to worry about solving this system here, but you want to find what these solutions are. Okay, and this problem actually had been studied in the past by LLM, Lin Lun and Maldacena, where they tried to write down the general BPS system for ADS5 solutions in M theory, which preserve n equal to 2 supersymmetry. Okay, and now I will describe this metric. Any questions? So now this system, really this system has one coordinate degree of freedom coming from the T, and this Riemann surface direction, the dependence on the metric on it, you can also control. So what these gentlemen found, this is O4. So I will write the metric in a way that is a little different from how it appears in the literature, and this is to serve my own purpose for later. Okay, so the 11D metric will have an ADS5 factor coming from here, and then it will have some six-dimensional piece, which is here. So there, H is an overall warp factor that I pulled out. Okay, so then now we can write this metric, the 6D metric. You get some e to the 2a factor, dx1 squared. Okay, so to distill the information, so this first piece here corresponds to the Riemann surface, and the warp factor A depends on the T coordinate. So this is not quite a Riemann surface because it's not governed by some Liouville equation. I'll come back to this point in a moment. Sigma, and so you have the F2 sphere which comes here. So this shrinks at one end of the interval T. And then in the other interval, you have fun things that can happen. The U1 chi is fibered on the Riemann surface, so this exterior derivative here is along these directions. And D is a field that depends on T, X, and the axis. The BPS conditions that you find is the following, is that the Laplacian of the potential here is going to be given as 1 over t dt e to the 2a. And then you have the constraints, which is OK. So this first relation is inherited from the fact that you have a cotangent bundle. You have this vibration here. Actually, this relation typically comes whenever you have a K-less structure hidden somewhere. Then sigma is related to the potential D, and then you get another BPS condition which relates the warp factor of the Riemann surface with sigma and D. So you only have one object that determines all the solution, which is this D. And when you plug things together, what you find that this satisfies the Torre equation. Right, and then whenever you get a solution here, then you can write down a solution there. Ah, good. So H, the warp factor, you can also write down. Over sigma. So if everything is determined. Right. And the flux is determined, but that's not important for now. Okay? So the goal here is to now study these solutions and then try to understand what does it mean to add punctures. From the simplest thing that you should first do, assume there is no, just look at the solution where you have D is separable, for example. So e to the D is separable to something like f of t e to the 2a0 of x. When you plug this into the BPS equation, you find that a0 satisfies the Liouville equation, and f satisfies an equation of this type, it's just quadratic coming from here. So having the Liouville equation means that now if you look at this piece over here, you can simply write that piece as being f of t times e to the 2a0 dx1 squared dx2. And this, of course, because you have the Liouville equation here, you have three types of solutions where k is 0, 1, or minus 1. When k is 0, this is a torus. When k is minus 1, you have a hyperbolic plane. And when k is 1, you have a sphere. Actually, the only solution that turns out to be regular is when you have a hyperbolic plane. So k has to be minus 1 in order to have a regular solution. And in that case, then this part of the metric is f of t times some h2. And you can compactify h2 by modding with a discrete subgroup. And then this becomes f of t and times a metric on some Riemann surface with some genus. Okay? And the genus, of course, is greater than 1. Okay? And this is how you obtain the compactifications of the five, the dual of the compactification of the five brain on a Riemann surface without punctures. This solution has a name. It's called the Maldacena and Nunez solutions, n equal to 2 Maldacena and Nunez solutions. There are two of them. And it was found actually earlier in 2000. But these solutions will underlie almost everything that we'll say today about n equal to 2 theories. So now, if you have punctures from a gravity point of view corresponds to adding sources on the Riemann surface, and you want to be able to describe those sources. You want to be able to describe the set of sources that are compatible with the supersymmetry of this background. Right, so you want to know what are the BPS sources. From the point of view of the Torre equation, you want to understand what sorts of localized object you can add here that preserve the supersymmetry. Equivalently, you can think of this problem as having some Riemann surface here, and having the puncture corresponds to basically having some boundary condition data that you have to give me far away. Okay? And if I give you this boundary condition data, then the Torre equation will interpolate from that data to the Maldacena and Nunez n equal to 2 solutions. So the question of asking what sort of data you can put on punctures corresponds to understanding what are the, what set of boundary conditions that you can put for the total equations in this system. Okay. And this was worked out by Gaiotto and Malathena. And the story here is quite nice. Yes. The physical input is... Yes. Yes, so I'll discuss these physical conditions. Okay. So the statement now is, if you add a source and it is compatible with the supersymmetry, the metric better be regular. Okay, the metric that you get better be regular, up to having some orbifold points. So one analysis that you can do is assume you put a probe brain in this background and look at what the probe brain does in that region. What should the metric look like near a probe brain region? And you can do this. And what you find is if you have a probe brain source, at the location of the source, you have the chi circle shrink. Right? And you can understand it physically from the fact that if you add a source for the D field, then near the source, because you have a Laplacian on a 2D region, the D is going to behave like log R. So the connection that you have here seems to blow up, but this just means that the circle itself is shrinking. Okay? So you want to understand this part. So the first step is classify the way that this thing could shrink, and you can put the solution turns out to be that you have to have a constant that sits here, a number that sits here. And this number, you can be more precise, is 1 minus 1 over an integer times log r. So generically, if you look at in a puncture region, the smoothness, the demanding that the solution is smooth, will tell you that the D has to behave in this way. Okay, so.
Smooth meaning the NCR?
I will get to this. So this is just you go near a region where chi shrinks. So the smoothness of having chi shrink means that D has to behave in this way. Okay. The next thing you can do is the general set of punctures, the way you classify those is now so when you write this, you actually consider the this metric here. You fix a point where the puncture is located. So you write this metric, dx1 squared plus dx2 squared is dr squared plus r squared d of phi, right, where phi is a region. So the puncture is located at r equal to 0. Okay? So now the picture you should have is you can think about the hyperbolic space as being some disk. Then the puncture is located in the origin, which you're trying to describe. And this hyperbolic disk, of course, kind of spans out along the t direction, right, from t to 0 to n. Then along this t, you can go for some segment where the chi circle shrinks, where d behaves in this way. And then you can let the solution jump. So it goes to a point here where in this region, it behaves in this way with some n1. And then you let it go for a while, it can jump to some n2. So on, n3. And it turns out the reason why you can do this is that near this region, you can actually solve the BPF equation. And what you find is that you get an orbifold. Okay? So near this region, you can use the total equation actually tells you that if you do this, then there the solution exists. And at this point of this, at this point where you have the jump, the phi circle shrinks, okay? And in, and generically, the phi circle shrinks and you get, and the coefficient in front is such that you get some z n1 minus n2 orbifold point. Okay? Yes, the periodicity of chi is fixed.
And it's,
yeah, 2 pi.
Then, what is this integer n, little n?
So, okay, good. So when you look at the, impose the condition that the chi circle shrinks, and then you look at, then you plug this constraint that you have some, well, there's two ways to get to it. So when you expand this in this way, typically what you do, you take the Taylor system and map it to the electrostatic potential and then try to solve the solutions with the boundary conditions that make the metric regular. But you can think of it in another way here, where if you just say, okay, I have a source, you have some delta function, so D behaves in this way. So D has some number that has to sit here, times log R. So let me call this n prime, and then you can plug it into the metric and expand around the r equal to 0 and see what this number has to be like in order to get a smooth solution, right? And then this is the answer. You can write this as 1 minus 1 over an integer. Okay? And then once you have that, then you can consider having a region where n is one value, and then a different region where n is a different value. And you can actually glue those two regions here. And the thing that allows you to be able to glue is that the Taylor equations actually have a solution in that region. And you can work that solution out. And then if you write the solution and expand in this region, you find that the chi circle shrinks, and you have an orbifold fixed point. And the orbifold fixed point is this, so this leads you to a u n1 minus n2 gauge symmetry in ADS5, therefore this type of global symmetry. So now the classification of n equal to 2 punctures basically come from taking these branches and just gluing them together. And then there is a constraint that these n's have to be a partition of n, 1. And also they're decreasing, it's a decreasing partition. They have to be a partition of n, therefore they're labeled by Young tableaus. Right? And this is how you reproduce the Young tableau label of regular punctures in the gravity side. Okay? So now we want to use the same intuition to try to push this to n equal to 1. Okay? So let's do this. So what happens now when you try to do n equal to 1? So when you're doing n equal to 1, now you consider having n m5 on sigma g. So here the way now the flat space system breaks is the following. You have some Minkowski, you have some Riemann surface, you have a C2 times an interval r. Okay? And then this C2 here is a Calabi-Yau sixfold, which is equal to, which in this case is a sum of two line bundles, which is C2 on sigma g. Okay? Where the P and Q here are going to be the same P and Q that you had to do for the twist in the field theory. Okay. Since this is a Calabi-Yau six-fold, the churn number has the first churn class has to be zero. So this gives you the constraint that P plus Q is equal to 2 times G minus 1 plus the number of punctures, which is a constraint that you had in the field theory. Very good. So now if you look at this, you want to think about, again, the near horizon limit. So if you think about the near horizon limit, you get ADS5 times Riemann surface times two circles now and two intervals. Okay? So again, where these things come from, the circles come from the two circles that you get from having these two complex planes. The two intervals and the radius direction come from the two directions on the complex plane plus this radial direction. That gives you the R and these two. A priori, this problem looks non-tractable because now the dependency of this system you want to solve, you want to reduce the metric, which depends on 1, 2, 3, 4 variables. It's messy, but you know that you should have an answer that makes sense, and so you should look for it. Okay. Any questions? Yes. Okay, so how do we look for this?
I have a question.
Okay.
The little n's.
Oh, okay. So the thing that fixes that condition here is if you look at the MN solution, which I wrote down the solution here. So here I sneakily wrote n squared plus this. Actually, the solution is like some t0, but then you use a flux and find that that constant, you can fix it to n, to n squared. Then the interval of t goes from 0 to n, okay? It actually turns out when these jumps occur, they occur at basically integer values of t. And then if you work this out, you find that the sum of the slope, the sum of t's parameters, have to be n. Okay.
You can understand the little n says 5 brain fluxes independently. Right.
Yes, you can put little caps and try to measure the 5 brain charge. So this is also worked out in Gaia Tomalefena. Okay. All right. So let's move on to n equal to 1. So when you go to n equal to 1, okay, I think I need to move faster. Okay, so trying to solve this is hard. But it turns out that a long time ago, there were people, Gauntlet, Martelli, Sparks, that worked out the general BPS conditions for n equal to 1 ADS5 solutions in M-theory. So you can go to that system and then try to find an ANSA. You start with an ANSA that looks like this and try to see if you can write down the solutions. Since we don't have time, I will not describe that setup, but I'll jump to the answer and then discuss from there. Or at least say in words how you get it. So this metric you can compute, you find that the metric is given as So again, it's always a 6D that I'm going to write. Okay, so this is what you have. Then the ij index is plus minus. So this actually is a circle. There. Okay, so first of all, if you when you're reducing this, you use the fact that you have two U1s, and then these U1s are related to the R symmetry and so forth. At the end of the day, you get this expression. So first, you have this same picture that you had for, where did this metric? Very good. So you can easily compare what you get in n equal to 2 and in n equal to 1. And you can see, in principle, you could have almost guessed what the right answer is, had to be. So you get the Riemann surface as such. And then you have a direction, t, which was the direction along the fiber. So this, in n equal to 1, you now have two of them, which are t plus and t minus over here. And then you had a U1, which was along the fiber, which is along the fiber. Again, you get this story, these U1s, which are the eta plus minus there. And then the metric components actually look quite nice. If you look at the, this whole problem in n equal to 1 now is actually governed by two potentials, two d potentials, d plus minus over here. And if you look at the metric here, gij is just a derivative of these d plus minus along the fiber directions. So this just generalizes this statement here. Right? So if you look at what sigma was over here, the sigma is just a derivative of the d of the potential along the fiber direction. There is a 1, but this 1 corresponds to a shift that you can easily do. And the H part of the metric, you can also write over F squared. So A plus minus. So in constructing this metric, you actually had to have the epsilon parameter built in. And the epsilon parameter was a mixing of the two U1s that you started in, that you had in the field theory. So this is actually a number that you have to solve for in the theory. So this is built into the metric. And then if you look at this expression here, this is also a 2D generalization of this expression, where you have the determinant of H, you can see is related to G here. And then you get two factors of G in the denominator and one factor of G on top, which is a generalization of this statement here.
Presumably, due to the 2A, you can write down as a function of E plus minus.
Yes, so E to the 2A, you find, is equal to S to the fifth, which is again a fact that you have n equal to 1, which I'll describe, times the determinant of gij e to the d plus d minus. Again, this determinant factor comes from, in n equal to 1, again, you have this sigma that appears here. Right? It's a 2D generalization of this statement. And then this d, you have two of them. The appearance of this S factor actually S squared is again has to do with the fact that you have to have an explicit dependence on epsilon in the metric. Okay. Now you have this. Any questions? Okay. Okay, so now you have this. You want to first make sure you can reproduce the stuff that you knew. So when we go back to the, did I erase it? I think I must have erased it. Okay, when we go back to the 2U1s, to the few theory, where you have the twisting the 2U1s, we know that if you turn off one of the twist parameter, which corresponds to one, when you turn off one of the twist parameter, you should reproduce n equal to 2 in some way. So in this picture, this corresponds to, for example, turning off one of the connections of these circles. Okay. So you can go ahead, let's say, turn off. So if you turn off D plus, you can turn off D plus, or you can turn off D minus. And also in making this reduction, you also assume that the diagonal part of the metric is zero. So you so you kill off the diagonal part of the circle metric of the circle metric. So h plus minus is zero, right? This is, you should just see that just you have two line bundles that don't talk to each other. So you kill off the diagonal part, and then if you assume then d plus is zero, then this will reduce to exactly to LLM. For the other circle with epsilon equal to a third. And you can explicitly solve this. And if you turn this one off, you get epsilon equal to minus a third. And both metrics exactly reduce to LLM metric. Right, so that's first check that you are on the right track. And again, still with this assumption, you can consider what happens if you take d plus minus and make it diagonal. So these you can write as two, I mean, make it separable. So you have something that depends purely on x. And then the parameters that appear here is going to be p over p plus q, plus some log of f plus of t plus. Some log of f plus doesn't have to depend only on t plus. Then you have plus minus, two functions. And you can take this, sorry, for the plus you have, for the plus you have p, and for the minus you have q. Okay? And then you can take this and plug it into the system over here. And when you reduce, you get the solutions of B cubed W. And this solution is what describes what happens if you take five brains and wrap them on a Riemann surface without any punctures. Right, so you can easily reduce to this system. Okay. So now you see that you're getting something that makes sense. You want to try to describe punctures, okay? So let's try to describe punctures. I'll keep that there. Okay, so when you try to describe punctures, the things that you learn by doing the n equal to 2 exercise, you always have some chi-circle that shrinks, right? So the location of the punctures corresponds to the shrinking of some circle. And such a circle, you can generically consider a circle which is of the form n plus d by d phi plus, plus n minus d by d phi minus.
Can I ask one to the functions of p old?
Yes. Yes.
So this is a horrible couple PDE, right?
Yes. Yes. It's a, as you can see here.
Right, right. That's what I was looking at. I mean, yes. If it's a function only of one, then it becomes more.
Yes. If it were a function of one, it's completely manageable as a function of two. Yeah, but the thing that you kind of abstract is the fact that it's literally the simplest generalization that you can write for this, for the n equal to, well, simplest is a matter of perspective, but you can see the parallel, okay? So what you can consider is, to describe punctures, a region at a puncture, you have some circle from the fiber that shrinks, okay? So generically, such a circle is going to be some linear combination here. So I'll call this something like, let's say, d by d chi. So the orbits of this circle shrinks at the location of the puncture, okay? And then you want to describe it. So of course, the because of this parameterization, what you get actually is d plus minus is going to go like n plus minus log r in the region near the puncture, okay? Then you can work the solution and see that it behaves nicely as you'd expect. And then to classify the general n equal to one punctures, you want to understand the analog of doing this here. But the analog of doing that, actually, now you have two T directions. You actually have a plane to consider. You have a full plane to consider, where you have here, is T, I use this T plus minus squared. Right? You have a full plane to consider. And in general, what you expect to happen is that you can have some boundaries along this plane of different sorts. And along each one of these segments, you can label as n plus, n minus, n plus, n minus in each one of these regions. So this means that in each one of these regions, one of this circle shrinks, and in this different one of this different circle shrinks. And the problem of classifying n equal to one punctures comes down now to understanding what sort of boundaries can you have here. What sort of gluing boundaries can you have there?
Before we do that, I mean, in the case of Gaussian models, I can explicitly see that if I choose d to be m log r,
yes,
and I zoom in,
yes,
I get ADS 5. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
ADS 7.
7.
Yes.
So
that's the equivalent picture.
So yeah. Can you do that here?
Yes, that's the precisely what this means by looking at this circle shrinking there.
That guarantees that.
Yeah, yeah. That's precisely what that means, and it's always this. But the point is that when you are building this n equal to one punctures, so here the n equal to two punctures, you can see it wasn't enough to just tell me that a circle shrinks. The Toda equation allowed you more freedom that you can start to take these different segments where they shrink and then glue them together to get a more general boundary condition. Okay. So the analog of this here is you, because now you have a two-plane, you basically have regions where you can do this. And in fact, in the case of the n equal to two punctures, you can clearly see what they are, because let's say you have the n equal to two punctures where you turn off one of the directions, then these boundaries basically are just lines, right? And these lines precisely correspond to basically extending these points along this other direction. Okay, so you can see that come out nicely. So the challenge of describing n equal to one punctures is to understand what can the metric look like along these jumps, right? And this should be governed by this system. And you can, so let me give a simplest example of one that you immediately see and learn, right? You can consider cases where, let's say, the jumps, where you have the jumps, you have a jump, but you always have the same circle shrink, right? You have the jumps, but you have the same circle shrink. What this means is that you can consider an ansatz for the D field where you have D plus minus is some number, M, N plus minus, times some D0 of some D0 of the X, since I can put R here, of T plus T minus, plus some function of just T plus T minus, plus minus some other function of just T plus T minus, right? The point is that if you have the D's vanishing as N plus N minus, you can take linear combinations such that to get a function which does not depend on the Riemann surface at all, and that is this object here. Then you have this overall coefficient, N plus minus. And then the N plus minus picks out which circle shrinks. And of course, you add the constraint that N plus, you can normalize this to be N plus N minus is equal to 1. Okay? And then you can take this ansatz and plug it into this system. Okay? What you find when you take the ansatz and plug it into the system, you get a Torre equation. You get a Torre system where you have T squared is equal to N plus T plus squared plus N minus T minus squared. When you take this and you plug it exactly into this, into here, you get exactly the Torre system. So what this describes a class of n equal to 1 punctures using this tableau notation there, where the jumps are like this. Okay? Because the jumps are constants of this, so the jumps corresponds to now these slices.
An arbitrary angle?
So this reduction, of course, is local, right? So in principle, these two don't have to be all parallel, right? I jump here.
No, I mean, what fixes? Okay.
Oh, so this
all of them are parallel, but what fixes the angle in the T minus?
Oh, the angle here is fixed by the ratio of this.
Oh.
N plus N minus, right? So the angle is fixed by these guys. And this is the simplest one you can actually write. And again, the nice thing is along the jump, what's really telling you that you have a good regular metric is the fact that you have a Torre system there. Okay? But if you want to, of course, classify the more general jumps.
Let me understand. So this sounds like effectively reduce this horrible coupled system of PDEs to the less horrible Torre.
Yeah. Well, I'm sweeping something under the rug. Actually, what you find is that when you put this here, you get a system which depends on a parameter B, which is A plus N minus minus A minus N plus. So you find that the system depends on this parameter. And when B is not zero, then you get the Torre, exactly. When B is actually zero, this is a special set of solutions where epsilon have to satisfy some special condition, right? In that case, you don't get a Torre, but you get something that's like a warped Torre, right? Which, and those are punctures that you associate to n equal to 1 Mal-Descendant linear solution. And we've seen evidence of such a thing existing when we did a probe analysis some time ago. But of course, the first goal in this story was to know what to look at to even try to address how should n equal to 1 punctures behave. And my argument is that this is the answer. This is the thing that you have to study. This is the thing that you have to study. And you have to study this problem here. How do you classify all of these jumps? And is it really possible to have these three intersection points? And what sort of things are possible? And if you can understand that, then you have the spectrum of n equal to 1 punctures. Okay. So I will stop here. Exactly on time.
Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions?
I have one.
Okay.
Do you have an understanding, at least of this simplified version of the story from field theory?
No. So from field theory, what this should look like, this really what it looks like is taking the n equal to 2 punctures, but having a weight, an n plus n minus weight.
So even if I fix my topological twist to be, let's say, q equal to 0 in your notation,
mm-hmm.
then I can still have...
So these punctures always exist. This is independent of the twist. Because remember, you're trying to work out the boundary condition.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
Right? So these boundary conditions are always there. Of course, there's a different question whether you can take this boundary condition and find an interpolating solution to an arbitrary PQ solution, PQ background. Right? That's something that also has to be done.
But have you done it for...
For this one, no, I haven't done that. That actually will require numerics. Because that, in order to find that interpolating solution, that actually requires you to solve this system where one side, where at one end you have something like this, and then at the other end you have an arbitrary PQ Riemann surface. And that's a numerics problem now. So the problem of finding the interpolating solutions now is a numeric. So right, it's no longer of what to do.
So you still don't have a classification in the sense that you don't know what are the conditions on these boundaries such that you can find an interpolating solution? I mean,
So the first question is, what are all the possible boundaries?
Yeah.
Which did you do this? And the second question is, given a boundary, what type of PQ background did you do? So if you have a classification of the boundaries, then the second question is really a numerics question. It's no longer something you sit down and try to work out.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, you can try to ask and then try to solve the system. Yeah, but at least, so the statement now, this is the gravity dual of n equal to 1 class S series. And to study them further, this is what you have to do. Okay. Thank you.
Questions?